We're hearing a school nurse's perspective on vaccination here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The vast majority of Wisconsin families are getting their kids vaccinated, but on the county-by-county level, there are vulnerabilities. And then these waivers, according to the State Health Department, religious and medical waiver numbers have stayed steady over the decades. It's the personal conviction waiver where they see the spike, and school nurses spend a lot of time on these waivers. Healthcare providers, how do you talk with families about vaccinating? What policies do you think could help prevent a contagious disease outbreak in your community? We're at 800-642-1234. Becky Wendell is a nurse in the Wittenberg-Burnhamwood School District in the central part of our state, and she represents the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses on the state's Council on Immunization Practices. Becky, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Well, when you look at vaccination rates, 2017 numbers from the CDC showing Wisconsin trailing 36 other states, how have you seen that affect you at the district level, at the school level?
Well, our percentage rate for immunization, meaning students who have received all the required immunizations for school, is hanging right around 95%. I do expect, though, that this year, once I have all the numbers calculated, that that percentage is going to drop slightly. I can't say for sure how much, but it will drop a little below 95%.
Where are the vaccinations stalling out? Is there an uptick in children not getting vaccinated for measles, mumps, rubella? You know, where are you seeing the vaccinations dropping off?
There has been an increase overall in students who receive no immunizations. And then I would say for children in the elementary ages, measles, the MMR vaccination and the varicella or chickenpox vaccination is the one that I see most frequently being missed or waived. And then more so at the middle school and high school level, it's Tdap that is being missed or waived.
And that's diphtheria?
Yes, tetanus.
Tetanus, diphtheria.
So, and pertussis.
And pertussis. Mm-hmm. So families can legally opt out of these vaccines by providing waivers. There are several different types of waivers. Can you tell us what they are and how they work?
Sure. So there's three waivers. There's the personal conviction waiver, which is for whatever reason, people just feel that vaccinating their child is not what they want to happen or not in their child's best interest. Then there is the religious waiver, and I feel like that's probably pretty self-explanatory. Based on your religious beliefs, you are choosing not to immunize your child. And then the third is the medical waiver. And the medical waiver requires that a healthcare provider is verifying that in this child's interest, it's better for them not to receive the vaccinations.
So personal conviction, that could basically be anything.
Sure, it could be. I didn't have time to make an appointment for my child to get immunized, so I'm signing a personal conviction waiver.
We're talking with Becky Wendell. She's a nurse at the Wittenberg-Burnhamwood School District in central Wisconsin. We're talking about vaccinations, how districts deal with waivers. Parents, have you decided against vaccinating your child? How did you arrive at that decision? Do you face barriers to getting your child vaccinated? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Becky, when you look at your overall job as a school nurse, how much of your time and effort are you devoting on making sure that the vaccinations are current or your waivers are current in your district?
Boy, I would say at this time of the year, leading up to the start of school and through the 40th day of school, so we have legally schools have timelines, so and that falls to me as a school nurse, timelines and deadlines that I have to meet. So I would say in these first couple months of school, I probably spend, I would say, close to 25% of my time working on immunizations, checking on waivers, contacting families, keeping administrators kind of abreast of what our situation is and what steps we may need to take. And so for the first couple of months, a lot of time.
Schools have to be nearly 100% compliant with getting either the students vaccinated or these waivers in. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. 99%.
So is that difficult for you to meet that 99% threshold?
Yes, it is. I have our school district right now hangs between 97% and 98%, and it's been pretty steadily at that range for the last few years. So over time, I've seen, you know, kind of a slow decline. I've been the school nurse here. This is my eighth year. So it is hard. You know, I do all of the legal requirements. I do the reaching out. I make personal phone calls, you know, but it is hard to kind of budge that number. So we've just kind of been hanging at 97 to 98% compliance.
What are consequences for the students who don't meet the state requirements?
For students who, if their parents or guardians don't make a decision either way, meaning the requirement is you either have to be immunized or sign a waiver. If you don't make a decision either way, you do risk the possibility of your child being excluded from school beginning on the 31st day of school.
Has that happened before?
Exclusion? We have not excluded any students. Our 31st day of school was yesterday. So as of Monday, a few days ago, there were four students who were still kind of hanging on, like, I wasn't really sure. We may have to exclude them, but waivers came in. And no exclusions were required. The exclusions are only for kindergarten through fifth grade. So we have a significant chunk of students who are not getting the required immunizations or having waivers, but they don't get excluded because they're beyond the fifth grade level.
Do you ever talk with parents who do sign a personal conviction waiver to make a case for vaccination?
It doesn't happen commonly. Most conviction waivers just come in, you know, I send a notice out by mail to start with. And most of the time, the waivers will just come back into me, you know, signed, mailed in or dropped off at the office, and an encounter, you know, conversation encounter doesn't happen. But occasionally, more so, I would say it happens just in passing, not so much related to the legal notices, but where parents will just ask me, you know, they see me in the hallway or before or after school and will ask some questions, you know, if they're hesitant or unsure about vaccination, and then we'll just have a conversation then.
And these waivers don't help with the ability to have herd immunity. I mean, you know, you're really trying to get your levels up, but a waiver can basically, you know, it clears the student, but it's not helping with your effort to raise immunization levels.
That is correct. So as I said before, our compliance rate tends to be 97 to 98% in that range for the past few years. Compliance just means either your child is immunized or you sign a waiver. With our waivers, our actual immunization rate has been about 95%. And as I said earlier, I think this year it's going to drop below 95%.
Talking with Becky Wendell, she brings us the school nurse perspective as we look at immunization in Wisconsin and how schools approach the issue with families seeking waivers. She represents the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses on the State Council on Immunization Practices. You can join in. How do you talk with families, healthcare workers, who are reluctant to get their child the scheduled vaccinations? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment. Maybe hear from you on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're looking at state vaccination numbers through the perspective of a school nurse who works with families. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The number of students in our state who are fully immunized declined slightly the last school year, and that decline is part of a long-term trend in Wisconsin of more parents opting to use personal conviction waivers. Our state is one of 15 that allow parents to get vaccination waivers based on personal convictions. Are you a school nurse or a public health professional? What do you tell families about vaccines? How do you help families with their questions and their ultimate decisions? We're at 800-642-1234. Still time for you, by the way. Becky Wendell is a nurse in the Wittenberg-Burnhamwood School District, and she stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Joshua is joining us from Watertown. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, Kate. How you doing this morning?
Good. What's on your mind about vaccinations here?
So my wife and I, we've been fighting this issue for so many years. We do not vaccinate our kids. Of course, we're not experts or anything like that. We just feel like the weight of what could happen if the vaccinations are given to our kids, it outweighs the risk. And we understand that there's a risk, but we understand that we do live in America too, and that if our kids do get sick, if we take care of it in a timely manner, that there are alternatives. There's a way for them to get better. So we fought with doctors, especially here in Wisconsin. We're from Houston, Texas, and we moved up here. And in Wisconsin, we found that the doctors are frowning upon us. So it's hard for us to find pediatricians for our kids because they don't want to see them because of the vaccination issue that they, you know, that we have.
Joshua, did you sign then a personal conviction waiver?
Sure. We do every single year. We do every single year. And like I said, we don't want anything to happen to our children based off of maybe a bad batch or a bad reaction. We are thinking when they get older, maybe going into high school, but obviously that's going to be up to them. That's going to be their choice.
Joshua, thanks for bringing your perspective here. Becky, what would you like to add?
I understand, at least to some point, the personal conviction waiver and what Joshua was saying, because I'm also a parent, you know, so I feel like I want to have say about my kids and about their health care and about the things that happen. So I don't disrespect his decision or parents like Joshua. I would just pause and say, though, that you have to, in some ways, see it from the pediatrician's point of view, in that they are, like myself, besides looking at individual children, we are supposed to be ensuring public health or doing our best to look at the health of a community and trying to reduce risk for the community in general. And so, you know, kind of frowning upon that or trying to dissuade you from that decision is them also trying to be a guardian of public health.
Let's bring in Kevin now in Platteville with thoughts on this. Kevin, hi.
Good morning, Kate. How are you? Very interesting subject this morning. Here's how this should go. You have the right in America to not have your children inoculated. It is at your peril, though. As with everything else, a problem in America, follow the money. What we need to do is pass federal regulations that say, if you do not have your child inoculated, then if your child does come down with one of these diseases, your insurance carrier will not cover you and you will pay cash.
Kevin, I want Becky to jump in here. And, you know, Kevin is also getting at something here in terms of legislation and certainly state capitol this year, it would eliminate Wisconsin's personal conviction waiver. There was bipartisan support for that. Where do you see insurance companies, as Kevin is saying, or politics entering this arena of public health?
Well, I guess I haven't really thought too much about the insurance part, so that is an interesting comment and thought. So I guess I'm not prepared really to speak to that. But politically, you can understand, I think, that at least from some sectors of the public, that there would be a lot of pressure to enact some kind of legislation eliminating or reducing parents' ability to go to a personal conviction waiver when you see the outbreaks of illness that have been occurring in other parts of the country.
And certainly, Kevin might allude to here, there is certainly an economic burden as well. If there is an outbreak in a district, that means kids can't go to school, and that ultimately means parents can't go to work.
Right, right. So I tend to kind of think through that lens a little bit more because I see it, you know, more on that level. When a child is sick, what does that mean for that child and their education? And then also, as you're mentioning, the economic impacts, parents having to stay home from work or find alternate childcare and the trips to the doctor and so on.
Let's bring in Stephanie now in Green Bay. Hi, Stephanie.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind? What question do you have? Can you hear us, Stephanie?
Oh, I can.
Okay, you were breaking up a little bit. Go ahead. Yeah.
I am kind of disappointed in the lines of questioning here. The question I called in with is, at what percentage is herd immunity effective? So if we dip below 98%, is the risk then that, you know, it's not effective?
Great question, Stephanie. Becky, explain for us herd immunity and what those numbers look like.
Sure. So to address this question, I think, real specifically, it depends on what illness you're talking about. For some illnesses, I'm just going to kind of go off the top of my head. The numbers aren't going to be exact. But for illnesses, say, like polio, I think for herd immunity to have the effectiveness that we look for, would be maybe between 80 to 85% of the population. But for things like measles, which are passed very easily and very quickly, for herd immunity to be effective, we're talking about mid-90s, so somewhere maybe between 92 and 95%. Remember, I am just speaking off the top of my head. But so that is maybe answer Stephanie's question directly. But how herd immunity works is that the more people you have vaccinated, the less quickly, when there is an illness outbreak, the less quickly that illness can be transmitted from person to person, the more people that have the vaccination.
Yeah.
So if you have a low immunization rate, the illness is going to pass much more quickly. And if you have a higher immunization rate, then the herd is protecting because there are many more people vaccinated, so you stop or slow down the progression of illness being passed on.
Let's bring in Polly now in Plymouth. Hi, Polly.
Hi. I am questioning the HPV virus. My friend had it done to her, had given it to her 13-year-old daughter, and that was a year ago. She has had so many terrible reactions. Her gallbladder's been out. I would like to know how the nurses feel about how the pharmaceutical industry is pushing these that are not as tested as the HPV.
Let's get Becky to respond here. And the HPV vaccination, giving to younger boys and girls here, what does that vaccination look like?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm prepared to speak a lot about that. That's not a requirement for school.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't spend a lot of time, kind of looking into how to talk with people about that vaccine. I mean, definitely it is one of the recommended vaccines. My children have been vaccinated for HPV. Anecdotally, I can't really speak to someone's reactions or the things that they've had without knowing more of the information. But if someone were to ask me, my reply would be based on the rates of HPV among young people and adolescents. And my own personal choice is my children are vaccinated for HPV.
What is your school's response or readiness plan if you do have a measles outbreak or if you start seeing another contagious illness spreading around your district? What's the plan?
Well, for measles, that is a reportable illness. And so for reportable illnesses to the Department of Public Health and to our local health department, we pretty much follow whatever they tell us we need to do. So in the case of measles, DHS and our local health department would direct us about what we would do. Again, with measles specifically, if there were a single case of measles in our school district, we would be required to exclude any students who do not have the MMR vaccination.
Becky,
not a choice.
Becky, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Becky Wendell is a school nurse in central Wisconsin, and she represents the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses on the state's Council on Immunization Practices. Coming up, Republicans in Congress stand by President Trump a little over 2 weeks into the House's impeachment inquiry. We'll look at developments on Capitol Hill with a UW-Madison political scientist and get your reaction to the investigation as you see it here. Do you think it's important for congressional Republicans to be in line with a president at this moment? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll talk about it after this news update here on the Ideas Network.